Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Talking Comics Podcast. Today is November 13th, 2019, otherwise known as New Comic Book Day, and you are listening to episode number 416. I am your host this week, Mr. Joey Bricino, and joining me this week is Mr. Bob Reier. Oh, you're not going to finish it?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thought Bronwyn would.
All right. And we are also joined by a friend of the pod and co-host of the Ladies of Valhalla podcast, Bronwyn Kelly Say.
Why, thank you so much for having me.
This is exciting. As you can tell, two of our regular co-hosts aren't with us this week. Sarah is off recovering from the Thought Bubble Con and reading the 27 books she purchased.
What a pile she has.
As evidence on the social media. And Steve, we're not really sure where he's at. My theory is doing the Tool Cirque du Soleil show that will hopefully be coming and touring the Midwest states probably in the future.
Yeah. Which is going to be, yeah, that's going to be followed up, of course, by the Tool Jukebox musical on Broadway. Sort of like the Billy Joel thing. It'll be Tool.
Moving out is what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know enough Tool songs to come up with like a clever title for the Tool musical.
Well, you've sealed your fate now, Joey, because Steve's going to have to fix that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got to start with that. No, he's off on some adventures, and perhaps we'll hear about it at some point, and they'll be back in the future. But we have Bronwyn here, and we're very, very excited about that.
Yay! I'm so happy I could join you.
How have things been going on your end?
Things have been going great. They're a little bit busy, but... Lots of fun to be had. So cool. Certainly there have been Tool adventures in the household, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, you guys went to a show recently.
Not too long ago. Yeah. And Steve actually went with one of his friends. So I can only handle so much live music with the migraines. So it's fun that he's found himself a concert going buddy. So
nice.
Because we have a few other shows planned this month, and I have to kind of space them out a little bit. So I think Steve would go to live music every other day if he could.
Every day.
Yeah.
We were talking off air. For your next episode of Ladies Valhalla, you've been going through a pretty big project and one that's pretty near and dear to us here on Talking Comics as well. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I'd love to. Yeah, we are doing a deep dive into Giant Days, which is... very exciting. Yes. And I know we've been talking about Giant Days forever because you guys have been talking about it since day one. And I know you and Steve have had words on who brought it to the pod.
Okay. Steve brought it to the podcast. I brought it to the site and it predates. All right. Anyway, continue.
I'm sorry. I had to. I love that debate.
You just open that up within me.
I may or may not have notes on a few other things to bring up, Joey. I'm not going to lie.
It's fine. But you said you got up to issue 50.
Yes. Yes. I had to take a wee break there just, cause you know, Giant Days, you've read it. So, you know, it's got a little bit of an emotional gut punch, right? So I've definitely hit an emotional gut punch, but, I'm loving it so much. Oh my goodness. What a book. And it's funny because somehow with all of the conversations that I've had with, you know, with Steve, with you, with Bob, with everybody who's been reading it over the years, I haven't managed to actually be spoiled on what the story's about.
Ooh.
You know, I knew what I knew the character names, but I didn't know anything about the story. So when I picked up the book, I didn't really know what to expect. And somehow I didn't expect kind of slice of life stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm reading this, and I don't know if it's appropriate to spoil the story that's over now. I don't I'll stay away from spoilers as much as I can. Okay. But I am over-relating to some of this. Like, there's a particular character in this, one of the trio, that I'm like, oh, no, that is me.
Okay, we sort of had this discussion. Who do you see yourself as?
Oh, I'm Daisy. Like, hardcore. Oh, I'm so Daisy. So, like, there are definitely specifics that are not me, but I showed up at university on my first day, and there were more people in my 4-floor residence tower than there were in the village I grew up in.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I'm Daisy. I bring that kind of naivete. I went to my classes. I took the crazy notes. My best friends were an overachieving biomed student and a casual goth. Girl,
oh, look at that.
If you could let her sleep through daylight, she would.
You lived giant days.
I lived giant days. Like, this is insane. It's wild. I still hang out with these women. Mm-hmm. I'm in my 40s now, and instead of hanging out and drinking too much and eating poorly, we go to the gym and go out and have wine and cheese. But
now, I think you should introduce them to giant days.
Oh, yes. I would very much like to do that. It's a little bit wild, actually, you know, and then I have Sarah and Jess, and we talk every day as well. So I have this other girl gang, and we also have a very kind of giant days vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it works in that same regard as well. And I'm the Daisy there too, if we're being honest.
You know, once a Daisy, always a Daisy.
Always a Daisy, you know? Oh, God, it's wild. And it's funny because when I started reading, just even before I started reading this, Steve was, you know, he was like, oh, I have an image of who you are and who the girls are and everything like that. And he wouldn't particularly reveal who he thought everybody was, but I finally badgered it out of him who he thought I was. And he thought I was Esther. And I'm like, oh, honey, that's so sweet. Like, he really sees me as cooler than I am, you know?
That's sweet.
Very
yeah.
cool.
And I'm so flattered that he thinks that I'm Esther. Like, that, I love Esther. Esther's a phenomenal character, you know? She's just so much fun, and she's so entertaining, and I wish that I saw myself that way some way, but I know thyself, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's not like any of the characters aren't amazing. They are, and obviously we all have elements of all of them, and, you know, but no. I'm so Daisy.
Daisy's got a great arc over the course of that series as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I love that book. I miss it already.
It's so good. It's so good. You know, and I had to put it down because it broke my heart. Mm-hmm. But I am looking forward to picking it back up when I can do so.
Yeah. And we're looking forward to hearing that episode as well. Do you have a hypothetical release date for it?
So we're recording the 7th of December. Mm-hmm. So it will be the following Friday.
Okay, cool. Nice. Yeah, Giant Days was also mentioned in a lovely email we got from a listener named Adam. He also asked about Thought Bubble and wanted to know what Sarah picked up. So we'll save the rest of that email for when Sarah's back on the pod. Before getting into lightning rounds, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what everybody's probably been binging for the last 24 hours, which is everything on Disney Plus, if you can get on. It was released on November 12th. We've been talking a lot about kind of the Marvel stuff that's going to be on there, some of the Star Wars stuff. My hope after we finish recording is that I'll log in and watch Mandalorian. Hopefully I can, get onto the site. Or the app. I don't even really know how it works, but we'll get it there. I will say, too, that there's been stuff going around the internet from Marvel has put up a, I guess, 12-minute, like, preview of their shows that are going to be on Disney Plus with a lot of really awesome concept art. Particularly, I sent some in the chat here on the Skype of everybody's favorite Pizza Dog and Kate Bishop, which is, and also Jeremy Renner as Goofy Hawkeye, which I think is so ridiculous. And some really cool kind of comics accurate Winter Soldier stuff and Baron Zemo stuff as well. So
Zemo.
Zemo with the mask. It's it should be exciting. And Disney Plus, man, entering the game.
Hey, you know, we talk about this a lot. We make fun of the idea that people like Tom Brevoort talk about, we're going to break the internet. Well, they broke the internet today. Hundreds of millions of people tried to get on the same website at once, and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It was nice. Jess did tweet out the lovely error message you get, which is, Ralph breaks the internet with Vanellope. So,
that's awesome.
Disney has a character for everything that they do.
Yeah, every meme, every tweet, you got one.
Yeah.
All hail our semi-benevolent techno dictator.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, Bronwyn and I were looking it up before we started, but yes, it is also available in Canada as of today, too. I don't know what it is for our listeners across the pond, if they'll ever get it and when, nor on the other side either. So if you do have it or you're able to get on, tweet at us, let us know, especially if you watch some of the kind of nerdier stuff that we do like talking about the show, talking about on the show. We'd love to kind of get that feedback because, frankly, we're not going to be able to watch everything. It's impossible. There's like everything ever on there. I was scrolling through on my friend's phone and like, the cartoon Gargoyles is on there.
No, exactly. I love that show. Oh my god.
Boy Meets World, the X-Men animated series. I'm like, oh, these are like, how did you even know these were going to be on there? And then obviously all the new stuff like Marvel Hero Project. I talked about the first episode they showed at the con, which watch that.
Break your heart. Talk about. Yeah
the Star Wars stuff. It's like, and let alone the back catalog of movies as well. Yeah, I don't really know. With the Netflix stuff, it was like Jessica Jones, 8 months later, Luke Cage. So like we had time to like watch those things. With the Disney Plus stuff, I don't really know how we're gonna keep up, as it were.
I'm resentful of my full-time job.
I was like, who drops on a Tuesday? You know, I was like, I taught, and then I was like, oh, maybe I can watch some before we record tonight. And then I was like, no, I have rehearsal for the school musical. I didn't get home until 7 o'clock. And it's like, how do people have the time to do this? I
missed ball hockey for the recording. Like, I'm already prioritizing.
The whole world is having this conversation today.
Yeah.
So somewhere Walt Disney's frozen head is smiling.
Yeah. He's like, yes, they'll use the money to thaw it out.
Build me a robot body and I can conquer the world.
So if you have any Disney Plus hype, feel free to reach out and let us know how the binging is going. Your Mickey Mouse year binging is going.
I've got one for you to look for.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of superhero-y in its own way, though I guess it's more Zorro. But there was a show back when I was a kid, and it came out on DVD in one of those tins that now sells for hundreds of dollars. Mm. It's called The Scarecrow of Romney Marsh.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Patrick McGoohan from The Prisoner and Secret Agent, and he's the Phantom's dad in that Billy Zane movie. And it's sort of a Revolutionary War English countryside. He rides around looking like Dr. Crane the Scarecrow on a horseback with this hideous laughter and this great theme song. And when you were 6 or 7, that was some scary stuff.
Yeah.
They have that. We're seeing.
Yeah, when you were describing it, I was like, this sounds like Sleepy Hollow.
Right?
That's exactly where they stole that from. Nice. And then DC went and stole it back.
Nice. Also, I don't know if it's either on Amazon Prime or Netflix, but your favorite movie, the Forbidden Planet movie, is on one of those streaming services, and I was like, Bob, I'm gonna watch this and I'm gonna love it. I know.
Oh yeah. It's the Tempest in space. How could you go
Tempest
wrong
in space? I love the Tempest. I love the Tempest and I love space.
You'll love Robbie the robot too.
So in terms of the rest of the show, we have some lightning rounds for you. We have two awesome books today, or actually I don't know if they're awesome. I'm just assuming that everybody thought it was awesome. I don't know. November number one and BB Free number one, two great debuts that we'll talk about in open discussion, and we'll see how long that takes us. since Bronwyn is guesting on the show today, we will start with Bob for lightning rounds.
Switcheroo!
All right, 5 minutes on the clock. I don't have. Whenever you are ready, sir, go.
Okay, with a charmingly funny story by Sam Maggs and wonderful art by Sweeney Boo and nicely done letters and colors by Brittany Peer and Krista Meisner, respectively, Marvel Action Captain Marvel number 3 was a marvelous, finale to a great little story arc. As Carol points out here, you have to have good friends who get you, and her best friend Jessica Drew, a.k.a. Spider-Woman, has drafted the Guardians of the Galaxy and jetted into space to help out her pal, which could be a considerable task as New York City, as last seen, was being invaded by Flurkins and Captain Marvel had been eaten by one. Now, all that craziness said, it's a pitch-perfect all-ages book, as both this longtime Carol Corps member and a fourth-grade comics fan of my acquaintance got the same enjoyment from it. On that note, this trade would make a spectacular gift for a youngster just coming to comics from the Captain Marvel film. And yes, Mr. Scorsese, Captain Marvel was cinema. Lois Lane, number 5, by Greg Rucka, Steve Perkins, Paul Mount, Simon Boland, was a deep dive into Lois's journalistic side, as she's found a whistleblower for background info into her story on immigration. And much like Renee Montoya has dug up her own dirt, in this case, some ne'er-do-wells who might be connected to the attempt on Lois's life. Great blend of film noir, newspaper drama with just a pinch of the latter's snappy humor thrown in. Just excellent as always. This has been a marvelous, marvelous series. Speaking of consistently excellent titles, Pretty Deadly, The Rat, number 3 by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Emma Rios, Jordi Belair, and Clayton Cowles. It's right there with my favorite issues of this incredible series. From the utterly cosmic opening through to our beautifully creepy introduction to a new Reaper, each page, each panel was memorable. Clara's Uncle Frank has taken Ginny along on his visit to the Reaper of Thirst in search for clues as to what happened to his niece. The Conjure Man does learn some things through the Reaper's ministrations, but not all of them are pleasant. You attend her words of dread. Simply put, Pretty Deadly has been one of the most unique comic series of all time, and this latest story cycle raises this artistic banner high. By the way, there's a short but very informative discussion guide in the back matter this time around, focusing on the notion of tricksters in myth, legend, and literature.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's awesome. Lovely little opening. We have Bunny and Butterfly, and a lovely quote from Bunny. We do well for ourselves when we do well for others.
Hmm.
Anyone get to read Pretty Deadly, by the way?
Just for that trickster essay, I may catch up. I mentioned it last time that I think I'm a pretty deadly, I'm a pretty deadly trader, just because I feel like I need the whole story. Mm-hmm. But
here's a bit of inside dope.
Mm-hmm.
The trades don't always have the back matter, and also in the back matter of issue 3 is a letter from your humble correspondent.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, issue 3 it is.
Issue 3 it is. Well, and it's funny because, you know, I say that I think I'm a trade raider for Pretty Deadly, and yet hearing you talk about Pretty Deadly and not reading Pretty Deadly every month makes me really, really... really feel really bad. I should read Pretty Deadly. I really should.
I try to keep it spoiler free.
Yeah. And I love trickster stories. Yeah, Nancy Myths, oh my the Brer God, Rabbit me Myths. Too. Like they're so good and I think I'll catch up.
I think you've sold me on it too.
Yeah, as we get to the end of the year, it's going to come up again.
Well, you know how much I love Pretty Deadly, but I'm with Joey. I'm typically a trade reader for that. Honestly, in general, because issues go by too fast for me. Mm-hmm. Back matter. I like to read when they're collected, but like I like to read issues collected. Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, like I read digitally a lot, so I like to read the issues when I have a bunch of them.
So you buy the single issues as opposed to buying the trade.
I do, yeah.
Yeah. This is 4 or 5, this volume?
This is 5.
So it'll, will it be done by the end of the year, or is it going into January?
No, it'll go into January for number 5.
Yeah. It's still awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And here's the thing. I read them. When I read one and read it again. Mm-hmm. And when 2 came out, I read number 1 again to read number 2. And I just now read 1 and 2 to read 3, just to have that feeling of continuity. That everything.
That's the way to do it.
Because it all ties together. So much of this book, where it's a little panel somewhere where you see, in this case, again, I'm trying that as well, Clara reflected in something else, and it's, oh, wait a minute. Oh, I see where this is going. Oh, I get what you're doing, Kelly.
I see what you're doing.
I see what you did there.
And that book is so dense, right? Like, there's so much in Pretty Deadly. So it's worth the reread multiple times. I go back and read the first couple of volumes regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they're amazing.
And here there are some pages that can be read in different directions.
Oh, yes.
Some amazing 2-page spreads by the team. Just sensational. By the way, speaking of sensational, you did a very, very nice Death Face Ginny.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We were pretty happy with our costumes. It was exciting. It was fun to do. Oh my goodness. The best was because we dressed up to actually hand out candy for kids, right? And this one little girl came to the door and said, "Oh my goodness, you're so pretty."
And you were like, "Pretty deadly." I had like full
skull face.
Yeah.
I'm like, "You're going places, kid. I like you."
Good attitude to have.
Oh dear. Have all the candy.
Yes.
It was so great. Yeah, it was a highlight for me. But yeah, no, we had a lot of fun with those costumes. I'm definitely going to cosplay that one again.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I am reading Lois Lane issue by issue, and I love that book. I'm becoming less and less into the art. And I get the art vibes with the style
mm-hmm.
of the narrative, but there's just something, I don't know, gaunt about it. I don't know. And I get that that's the vibe, but there's something I'm not enjoying about the artwork per se.
Mm. That's a tough one.
Yeah. But
it either hits you or it doesn't. Yeah. It is a little, it is noir, so it's dark, but it's also dark in a DC house style kind of way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then you get that action sequence with Renee that blows that apart, and it's like, oh, why can't more of it be a little more energetic, a little more stuff going on? She's been great in this series.
I love the Renee Montoya stuff. It is so good.
Nice.
That's a cool book.
Yeah. Number 17, now serving number 17. Just before she kicks some butt.
Bronwyn, have you been reading Lois Lane or no?
I haven't yet, no.
Okay.
No, it makes me want to, though.
It's a cool book, and it's a cool character, and Rucka is doing some really, really strong work there.
I love Rucka. I hate even saying this, but I don't read a lot of Big Two.
Sure.
I just don't, like, and I'm probably going to get angry people for saying this, but I don't like Batman, like, at all.
Oh, that's going to get us some letters.
That's
I
all
know.
Right.
I'm really sorry. It's Batman fatigue. Like, it's not always been that way. You know, like, when I was younger, I went to the Tim Burton movies, mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. the day they came out. My mom, my grandma, and I would go and see the Batman movies. Like,
yep, giant days.
Good thing.
That was the thing. Yeah, right?
You're we always in these them. Trios. I love them.
I know, right? It's crazy. Trifecta force, man. But I have so much Batman fatigue because there are so many incredible stories out there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just keep getting the same story over and over again. And I get it. People love Batman and that's great. But I just am so sick of seeing it. You know, And every time they're like, oh, we got another Batman, or oh, somebody's doing, like, I am sure 100% that those Batman stories are great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of talent there. I know, I'm not disparaging that. Like, I 100% believe that those are excellent, excellent stories. I just don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny because I'm going to start my lightning round with Batman.
I know. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. It's called a segue in the biz. That's all. Yeah, we're
you're
doing.
Not wrong. You're not wrong in that. Well, granted, there was a bubble up for a Batman excitement during the Adam West era back then.
Mm-hmm.
But DC's main character was Superman.
Yeah.
Until Tim Burton's movie,
mm-hmm,
changed the game.
And even in the last few weeks, I mean, how many Harley and Joker books have we just gone back to and back to and back
Lord.
To? Yeah, honestly, like multiple series. And there's the Batman. What is it called? The Batman, the last night, something like that. The one that Warren Ellis is doing. And it's like, I read that first issue, and it was cool. But then I was like, why does this exist?
Right. And I resent the fact that I'm going to have to read that Harleen book because I love Stepan and I can't not read his stuff because I just love it so much.
It's awesome.
And, but I legit resent the fact that I'm going to have to like it.
it's really great as well.
I know.
But then, like, it's like you're saying, like, the stories are great. It just, sometimes it's fatiguing having this many things. And I think I'm going to actually talk about two things in my lightning round in a second. One is Batman, which I'm loving right now. And one is the X-Books, which we've been talking about over the last few weeks and I'm really into. And I'm not going to lie, I started to feel it this week. I was like, ooh. Oh, okay, this is a lot. I'm starting to slow down on some of these books because there were two this past week, two new X books. But I'll get there in a second. So I'll go next and then we'll end with Bronwyn, our special guest. All right. 5 minutes on the clock for me. Beep, boop, 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 beep, beep, boop.
Okay. Shazam.
So I will start with Batman number 82, Tom King, Mikhail Janin, and Jordi Belair, which I must say is my favorite team on this book from the last 40 issues or so that I've been following along with. This is another chapter in the City of Bane series, which I know some of us on the show have been kind of floating back and forth on, but I've been gung-ho this whole time, and this issue, more of the same. I was loving the twists and turns of this arc, and specifically this issue. We have Batman versus Bane finally here in some fisticuffs. Unfortunately, I thought I saw it on some of the solicits. Bane did not have a mustache in this issue.
No.
I kind of wish he did. But anyway, Batman versus Bane in their one-on-one fight. Nope, JK, we get a little bit or a lot of bit of the cat mixed in here as well, which made me really, really happy. I love the twists and turns in that fight. Really dynamic, really energetic. And, you know, one of the things that we've kind of been not critical of, but noticing more with the Tom King run is his hard cuts and his hard transitions in some of his scene work. And this one felt very cohesive in its, this is what we're doing. We're doing this fight. A little bit of the Thomas Wayne in here as well. And a very shocking, twisting ending here that I was very into, and I'm really looking forward to the next few issues leading into the conclusion to King's run on the main title. I know there's a lot of questions up in the air about Batman Catwoman and what that schedule is going to be like and when we're going to see the first issue and things like that, but regardless, I'm very into the resolution to this run so far, and I'm looking forward to the next couple of issues. I also read a couple of number ones this week. Undiscovered Country number one. This is a crazy new book from Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, with Giuseppe Camuncoli and Danielle Orlandini, with colors by Matt Wilson and letters by Crank. This is a new Image book, a new dystopian comic from Image, which, hey, you know, we know they do well. But I will say this felt very, very let's say, relevant, I guess. So the basically the world now is that America, the United States of America, has shut itself off from the world, has literally walled itself off from the entire world. A world now that consists of the Alliance Euro-Afrique and the Pan-Asian Prosperity Zone. So we have these two super giant super states, 1984 style, and we have America in the middle. And nobody has been able to enter America in however many years. And the book opens with a helicopter carrying some scientists and some soldiers responding to what appears to be a broadcast from inside the United States from a Dr. Sam, I don't know, who says he has the cure to this sky virus that has been plaguing the rest of the globe. So this helicopter is making its way into America for the first time in so many years, and things obviously don't go well. There's some crazy Mad Max like mutant stuff going on too. It is pretty crazy. This is like cinematic, high, hard dystopian sci-fi. I was very into this first issue, and just given the pedigree of the talent on it, I wasn't surprised being into it as much as I was. It was a little oversized for a first issue, which was nice to see, and I'll definitely be checking out number two as well. And as I mentioned before, I read X-Force number one and New Mutants number one. X-Force from Benjamin Percy and Joshua Cassara with Dean White, and New Mutants from Ed Brisson, John Hickman with Rod Reese. And Steve and I were texting back and forth because Rod Reese's artwork on New Mutants is the coolest thing ever. Like, that work is absolutely stunning, totally different in terms of what it looks like. This is going to sound bad, but I wish the book met the standard of the art. Here's the thing, and I want to say it's good. A lot of kind of recapping, partly because, you know, frankly, I guess many people aren't familiar with some of these characters. Even though Sunspot, you know, has been in the Avengers books, and I've been a huge fan of Karma and Daniel Moonstar and all of these guys, yeah. And Ilyana has been a huge player in the X books as well. But, you know, I guess in the context of the New Mutants kind of vibe, it is a little new. I don't know what their logic was, but there's a lot of kind of recapping and retreading some of the relationships in here in a good way, kind of introducing them. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, let's go find Cannonball, who's up in Shi'ar territory. So they hitch a ride with the Starjammers and they're like, let's go be space pirates. And I was like, okay, this is cool. And it's I don't know, there's just something that wasn't necessarily vibing in the writing and the kind of genre stuff that they were doing. With that said, the artwork is absolutely stunning, and maybe now that we're kind of into the narrative, it'll pick up. I did like X-Force number one, I think, between the two of them, a little bit more this week. X-Force number one from Ben Percy was just like total balls to the wall insanity from like cover to cover with a shocking, shocking ending. Some great members on the team there. Some really, a really shocking opening with Domino 2, and a lot of questions about, you know, part of something that I'm sure Brahman will talk about when she talks about her lightning round as well. Some of the revelations coming out of Hawk's Pox about, you know, reincarnation and the like. And there's some really shocking, let's say, twists and turns in X-Force number one that really kept me engaged throughout, whereas New Mutants I was a little bit more trying to feel it out. Both it, as I said, we've been following this X relaunch, Dawn of X, releasing two at the same time was a little lot and it took me a while to get through them, but it's been a great relaunch so far, and it kind of cycles back through this next week as we get an X-Men number two and go through the second issues of a lot of these books that we've loved. The last book I'll mention, and I'm running a little over, but I did get a chance to read Sean Rubin's follow-up to The Lovely Bolivar, which we love so much on the show, mm-hmm. as part of our dinosaur trio or whatever. Bolivar Eats New York. So this is Sean Rubin. This is adorable and wonderful from Boom. So it's basically a find the foods adventure with Sybil and her dinosaur T-Rex best friend, yeah, Bolivar, all over New York. They go to the Bronx, they go to Queens, they go to all five boroughs, and there's little guides in the corner that's like, you know, find the Don Tots, find the Shumai, it's find the Knishes, you know, it's and you get to look into the windows and find all the little things, and it's so fun and wonderful. I love it. I love the Bolivar books. I do agree with some of the sentiments that, you know, we were emailing back and forth that this is a much lighter affair than the first Bolivar book. But I just think it's so cute and fun. And I'm not going to lie to you. Finding some of the foods was hard for me. I was like, I am an adult and I cannot find this lemon icy anywhere on this page. And then eventually I found it. But I had a really good time. And that's my lightning round. Bob, I know you read Bolivar, right?
Yes, I did. And I'm the person who said, yes, it is very light on story. The first one was really deep for a lighthearted dinosaur type adventure.
And it was also longer. The first issue, the first book was like 40 pages.
Big size Boom Archaea monster book. This, though, as you're saying, is absolutely adorable. The games that are part of it, the humor between Sybil and Bolivar are just wonderfully real, funny, real people stuff. If you've got a kid who's a little bit of a finicky eater, going on a dinosaur food adventure could be the thing that gets them to eat a corned beef sandwich, you know?
I want a corned beef sandwich. I don't want to try all this other amazing food.
the city with the greatest food on earth, because it's got food from every corner of the earth somewhere. Yeah. And it, again, the art carries everything. If it had no words at all, you'd be good to go. But it's those words that sell it. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of fun. And the person I bought the first one for will be getting the second one for Christmas. Oh, the little fella will absolutely love it. I also did really enjoy Batman. Especially, we even have moments where Bruce is feeling so much better about himself. He even cracks wise now and again.
Yeah.
Woohoo! The Selina stuff was great. The mess that Thomas Wayne has made, I don't know how this is going to get cleaned up.
Not a clue. And then still no resolution to the Alfred story.
No, though there's some news around the internet today about people writing Alfred Pennyworth RIP, which still doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Batman RIP didn't mean anything either when they did that 10 years ago or whatever.
I'm not counting that as gospel yet. The last words said in this book are pretty telling in terms of old DC history about major crises, shall we say? So
what were the last words? I don't remember.
It is. wait a minute, I'll get it out. I just put it down, but we are at... Should we spoil last year or why not?
The last words are on the last page, Bob.
Yes, but I have to get the book back out of the pile. We've come to the end, says Thomas Wayne. Fetch the pirate.
Mm.
I'm thinking it's a guy with a gold mask and a red outfit.
Mm-hmm. Batman.
That's some stuff going on over there.
I'm having a good time.
Yeah, and we still don't know, as you say, the schedule of what's coming, because Batman was supposed to go to a monthly, but they've already solicited two issues for January. Mm. So I don't know.
I mean, the first thing I'll say is, I can't believe I'm reading Batman every other day. Never in my life would I have thought that would be the case, and yet here I am.
We're what, 4 years or so into this, or 3 years maybe?
No, I mean, yeah, I guess. We started
issues in the 20s and 30s.
Yeah,
Steve was reading it, and he had us all reading. Was it number 18, where Bruce and Selina on the rooftop?
Yeah, that's a classic. I started reading around Cat and Bat in the Desert. That's when I started reading.
Okay, that's in the mid 30s.
Yeah. But if we do the math, like, so this is 82, we divide it bi-weekly, so that's 41.
That's
3 years. That's almost four years. Yeah, because, you know, it's like two a month, right? Yeah. 12 months is 48 issues? Oh, yeah, you're right. No, it's 24. I can't do math. Whatever.
It's been a while
since that War of Jokes and Riddles or whatever the hell.
I backed out of that one, actually. I dropped out for a bit and came back.
I'm just requesting that if at some point they do decide to reboot, because you know they do that, if they can retcon something just as a personal favor to me, maybe Thomas can buy his wife an actually nice string of pearls.
Real pearls
that aren't going to split like that?
Yeah. Because every woman knows that pearls are strung with a knot in between each one, so they don't do that.
I'm glad someone's backing me on this. Thank you, Bronwyn.
You're welcome.
But here's the thing. All the men that have written Batman.
Yeah,
every single one of them. This is what I'm saying. Diversity makes a different story.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe Martha was wearing the fake pearls down Crime Alley.
Yeah, she switched them out.
Yeah. They came up, by the way.
If Crime Alley was the way where they were going and not the opera, then hey, you know.
Where are we going tonight? Crime Alley. I'll wear my fake pearls.
The Crime Alley cinema to see Mark of Zorro.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the pearls even showed up on Batwoman on TV.
I know, in the first episode.
Yeah.
And they also showed up in...
later, they become a thing where someone wants to steal them.
Yeah. And
nobody wants to steal fake pearls, I'm just saying.
No.
Yeah.
Bronwyn, you ready?
Yeah. All right.
Damn.
I love your lightning, by the way. Yeah. It's slightly less scary than the regular stuff.
It's thunder.
Okay, so I don't even know where to start here. Hoxpox. I read this so that I could talk to you about this, Joey.
Aww.
Did, because I was listening to you and talk about Moira, and I was like, yes, we have to have this conversation, because I've always loved Moira, but reading Hoxpox, I was like, damn, she is the most powerful mutant
ever in the universe.
Always, and now I want to talk about this, because I love this as a reset of the X-Universe, like, maybe multiple resets at this stage, right? Mm-hmm. So Moira's mutant power is actually retcon?
Pretty much.
But I want to know how the pitch went for this, you know? So I'm going to make everything that's happened ever totally irrelevant by effectively making Moira a reset switch. She's the biggest power and also the biggest target. But how far does this reset power go? Would it reset a Technarch? A Titan? A Dominion? Does Galactus fear Moira McTaggart?
Mm.
Like, how deep down the well are we going? I'm falling right all the way down it. Everything since the moment she's born becomes irrelevant. Because all she has to do is take her own life and it's done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mind blown. Thanks, Hickman.
Somewhere on his giant whiteboard, I'm sure, is a little sunburst with minds blown with exclamation points in red.
Right? I mean, even to the point where they're trying to decide, you know, okay, we're going to destroy this entire planet, but you can't be on it. Because if you die before the planet gets destroyed, then the planet being destroyed stops and doesn't happen. And then do I become a god? No. Maybe. I don't know, but I won't know because you're dead. Maybe I won't know anyway, but I'm not taking that risk. But I'm going to turn my back, even though you're with a guy who has claws. Huh.
Give me him. I'll take him on. Leave her alone. That one, leave her alone.
Oh, my goodness. Reading this in the prescribed reading order was almost as mind-boggling as the story itself. Going back between Hawks and Pox. it was so great, though. It was so much fun. This was really a fun kind of reset to me of X-Men, which was kind of going back to my childhood for me, because X-Men was, other than Archie's, as we discovered when we were talking to Kelly Thompson, my first sort of floppy comic book, right? Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that. So thank you, Joey. You inspired me.
It's a good place to get back on the train.
It really was. Yeah. And that was one of my few superhero books. I don't read a lot of superhero books, so it was kind of fun to do that again. Now, the other thing you guys have inspired me to read was Die. Because I hear you all talk about this. And I have played some D&D in my life because, you know, nerd. look, I make that nerd look good. But wow. I mean, you guys talk about this and you make it sound so good. And then I read it and I still didn't see that coming. How does he do that? You know, I'm making my notes and I'm writing down all the characters and I'm like, okay, so we have a John Belushi, but not American and high on sugar. Check. Okay. We have the smart and quiet kid who was depressed even before he lost his parents. All right. Okay. That means that there's something sadder than parent loss coming. Thank you, Gillen. Yeah. we have the pretty kids. We have the tag-along sister who wants to be a cyberpunk. You know, we have the birthday kids. We have the mean French girl. Okay, I like it. Aww. We have a Gormenghast reference. Oh my God, I thought I was the only person ever who watched or read Gormenghast. Apparently just the only one on this side of the planet.
Probably so. Help me out here.
Oh my goodness, it was so great. Weird sci-fi fantasy book. They did a a kind of a short series of it probably 20 years ago. They did and it aired on Sci-Fi and well in Canada Space, and it was just amazing. It was really good, but I was totally in love with it, and I'm watching it and all my friends are kind of looking at me like, this is even too much for me. I don't know.
And here's a reference 20 years later.
Yeah, exactly. So I read that. I was like, oh my God, my people. And then, you know, we're defining our characters. And I'm like, okay, I have played some D&D and I have had fun making characters. And I still have character sheets from my university days. Yeah, where I was playing D&D with my Giant Days girl gang. And we had some fun with this. You know, we had like fat fairies who couldn't fly and a minstrel whose triangle got fused around his neck because he was so bad. And but a cyberpunk and a dictator and a grief knight and an atheist with gods for pets. Like, this is some next level stuff. Oh my goodness. And then it gets weird. And this is just the first issue. This is amazing. So then it goes 2 years. And then it goes 25 years. And then it gets weirder again. Oh, I love this book so much. And then I stopped taking notes because all I said was, what? Yeah. Kieran Gillen. That's some talent. That's some talent. And to be paired with Stephanie Hans, like, the art in this book is so spectacular. Just the color and the line work is so evocative. It makes it look like the pictures are expanding out past the boxes, you know? So, like, just this is expanding out into your face off the page. And the story lends itself to that style of art, and the colors are just incredible. And I got to be honest, Clayton Cowles is, I think, my new favorite letterer.
He's one of the best.
He is spectacular.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get into why I think that is later. But I never, when I started reading comics a billion years ago, I don't think I even noticed the lettering specifically. But as I get a little bit older and my visual acuity gets worse and worse and worse, and my eyes have never been good, but they're bad. And the lettering becomes more and more important to me.
That is the reason.
It is a pretty significant factor for me in a comic. And he is very, very good at what he does. Every book that I'm like, yes, the lettering in this is spectacular. Who did this? Oh, Clayton Cowles.
Yeah.
that makes sense. So I never thought I would say I have a favorite letterer, but apparently I do.
Good choice. Made a good choice.
Yeah. Other than that, everything I want to talk about, we're going to talk about together. So I think I might be done.
Yeah. I was going to ask, you're talking about Die, and I think Gillian does do such a great job with the world building, but he also credits so much to Stephanie Hans. And I was wondering what your experience with Stephanie was and like what you thought of her artwork.
Oh, she's spectacular. She's one of Steve's favorite artists. Mm-hmm. So I've seen a lot of her work because he's constantly like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Isn't this great? I'm like, yeah, honey, it's amazing. I love it. It's beautiful. So yeah, she is a big name in this house. We have a lot of her stuff. She is quite spectacular. Cool. And she's right in my wheelhouse. You were talking about it earlier, Joey, when you said that the art suits the style of the story, but it doesn't appeal to you.
Right.
That happens to me quite a lot, and I try not to let it detract from the story for me, because when you have a particular art style that suits the story, that should mesh, right? Like, you should have an art style that suits the story, because otherwise it could be too distracting, right? Mm-hmm. And the art form should go together, especially in a visual medium like this. But I do have particular aesthetic preferences, and not every story is going to appeal to those. And I like to read a lot of different kinds of stories, but visually, aesthetically, like, I'm a colorful person. I really love a lot of color. I really like the starkness of black and white. That's starting to appeal to me through reading a lot of Terry Moore, and Black Magic really did black and white very well. And with just pops of color here and there, like, that I really loved as well. So there have been a couple of black and white things that I've really liked, but some of the more muted and kind of, I don't know, flatter tone colors, they don't really appeal to me, even though they do really suit styles of storytelling. But Stephanie Hans, her art and her use of color, and it just, that speaks to me.
Yeah.
That's my wheelhouse right there. Colorful, kind of whimsical. That's Bronwyn.
She's also one of those rare talents that can do that epic painterly thing, but mm-hmm. then when it comes down to small personal moments, she breaks your heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Devil's in the details.
Yeah. There's some heartbreaking in that book, I'll tell you.
Oh man, just get ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Moira stuff in Hox Pox is, you know, we talked about it. Like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Like, what is this, like every one of her lives is like a different version of the universe. So like,
If
she dies, does the universe just like restart? And we're just like, all right, here we go. New version of all your favorite characters. Boom. More of a life. It's number like a 10.
Baklava of universes.
It's crazy. And I just, those 12 issues back to back to back to back to back were every week. It was just like, what is happening? But also, what is gonna happen? And now that we're like afterwards and we're into the aftermath of it, I don't want to speak too soon, but like, it seems like they've really taken the ball and run with it in like the best way. Like what nice. Hickman did with House of X and Powers of X was just like capture everything. You mentioned, you know, like X-Men floppies when you're a kid, you know, like that energy, and mm-hmm. he took everything that the X-Men like can be, and he was just like, let's just do it. We're doing all of it. It's gonna be crazy. All your favorites are back. We're blowing stuff up from the beginning. It's wild. And and at the core, I loved it to hear that you love Moira, because I also love Moira, and like, she's been gone for a while until this little miniseries, and or maxi series, I suppose.
I guess.
And it was so nice seeing her back, and so nice seeing her fill that that role, that spot that I think she's always deserved. Like, I love those not necessarily early Claremont days, but like 3 or 4 years into Claremont, when he was like doing the stuff, and Moira was part of that, and it's really cool to see Hoxpox reaching back into that and now leading into this new X universe.
Yeah, it's just so exciting. It's like being a kid again and reading all that stuff again.
Mm-hmm. Oh gosh.
Oh,
there's just excellent. And there's still stuff from that I just like have no idea what happened, like all that stuff in like the far future, and I was like,
I know.
And I was like, look, I know the Technarch, I know all this stuff, I've been down that road, but this was like, what the hell? And then I was like, what is the connection, what are we doing? Is this book is called Powers of 10. I had no idea. Like,
and the reverence for the five and the eggs and the I know.
Oh, so crazy. So crazy. Yeah, it's a new day, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's cool. I really like it when they just are like, no, I'm just gonna throw all of this to the wind and say F it and move forward with this because I want to.
Yeah. And sometimes it really works. Like, sometimes those crises over at DC, like, they were the best thing going, and they really led to some cool stuff. Other times, not so much. But this time, I think it really worked out, at least for the X-Men. And here's the thing. I think it only works for the X-Men. I don't think you could do it with any of the other corners. They tried it with the Inhumans, bombed.
Yeah.
And a Terrigen bomb, if you will. But I don't think
I love you, Joey.
You can't really like do this kind of reboot, reimagining with like the Avengers line, I think, and even the Fantastic Four line. I don't think it really works. And DC, they do the whole thing. Like, they just like throw the whole bathtub out when they do it. So this was cool to kind of see this one corner of the universe just totally get rejiggered, as it were.
Yeah, that's the thing that kills me, is they're just rejiggering that one little corner of the universe, but they have this universe destroying power in it.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that ripple effect end?
Well, we don't know, because we don't know where she's at.
I love it so much.
And at Comic-Con, Aaron and I went to the X panel, and they were like, somebody asked, they were like, so where's Moira? Is she going to be an important character? And I don't remember. It might have been, it wasn't Brie Vor, because he's the Avengers guy. I don't know who the X guy is. Nick something, maybe? I don't know. But anyway, he was like, Moira, he used some metaphor. She was like, they were like, Moira's going to be between the raindrops, as it were. And she'll pop in. And when she pops in, you know it'll be important. And I was like, God damn it. Now I guess I got to read all these damn books. But
wait for that appearance.
Exactly. But I'm along for the ride, at least for a little while. We'll see how many of these I stay on. I think now that we're a month in, I really enjoyed Marauders. We talked about Marauders.
Yep.
I also really enjoyed Excalibur.
Excalibur
too.
Was fun.
I do like the main X-Men line too. New Mutants and X-Force. I think I'll definitely check out X-Force number 2. I think I'll wait to see what Steve thinks of New X-Men number 2 to see if I'll read that one. But I think Marauders and Excalibur were the ones that I was really, really taken with over the last month.
I will write that down.
Yeah. Marauders is wild. If I had to pick one, I'd be like Marauders. Kate Pride as a pirate on a boat. I'm like, let's go.
You had me at Kate Pride.
Yeah. So good.
Quickly speaking of Terrigen, did anyone see the video that's rolling around the internet of what purports to be a young woman auditioning for Kamala Khan?
No, that is not real. That's not
true.
I don't know. Is it? Get out of here.
I don't know. In her dialogue, she's speaking to someone who's interviewing her, and she's talking about Cap, so we're assuming it's Captain Marvel, and talking about the Young Avengers. Yeah, I know. That's why I bring it up. Terrigen Mist is all there, and Inhumans, and the whole... It could be a great hoax, but it's well done if it is. Yeah.
The other thing about Kamala-Khan is... I mean, are they going to do the Inhuman stuff? I guess they could. I don't know. Whatever. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. Let's talk about BB Free, because I love BB Free. Talking about Young Avengers, because Gabby Rivera wrote America. How about that?
Boom. Yeah.
I'm hosting the show, Steve. Here we go.
Hosting the crap out of it.
Yeah.
The
yeah. Bah, 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 bah. Yeah. So we'll move on to the open discussion here, and we got two books to talk about. Two big number ones this week. One was BB Free, number one, from Boom Studios. This was by Gabby Rivera, who, as I said, did America, one of our favorites here on the show. And art by a brand new artist, Royal Dunlap, who I saw speak at New York Comic Con a couple of times. And he was talking about, like, he, like, literally just graduated from college. Like, he's just graduated, and he got this gig. And I got to tell you, he did a killer job. Like the art in this book is fantastic. But basically, here we go. Here's the pitch from Boom. BB Free broadcasts her underground radio show from her remote swamp community, and she has no idea she's actually the chosen one. It's been over 100 years since the plague that ate greed wiped out half the population, and it's the only world that BB has ever known. But when BB rebels against her overbearing father, she realizes that everything she believes in could be a lie. Now on the run from her own family, BB will learn the truth about the world she lives in and about the power she never knew she had. So as the kind of pitch from Boom kind of reveals for us, our main character is BB Free, this free-spirited, spunky Latina who wants to get her voice out to the world via that good old-fashioned broadcast radio. So she teams up with her friend Chulita over the waves and tries to get her show up and running for all those kids out there that just wants to be free. Also, it's 2232. It's like this crazy future, which is beautiful and crazy, and I loved it. What really drew me here, I love the characterization, I love the premise, I think it's really cool. I love the art. Royal's art is just so stunning, and it's got this great energy to it, and the colors are just, they just pop off the page and just energize your eyeballs. I just so very much hope he answers my email and we get to have him on the show because it was just such an amazing, I think, first issue for this kid. And I think Gabby Rivera, we read America, and some of the things we talked about when we read America, especially that first issue, was like, she was clearly kind of getting the ropes of writing comics, you know, in terms of like the pacing of it and how to best use the kind of the sequencing and paneling and the medium itself. But here, it is total comfort. The story just clicks every single panel, at least for me. I felt the characterization. I felt the energy coming off the page. I think Royal's work helps, you know, that as well. But just the total premise, you know, it opens with BB walking in the swamps and, like, talking to this badass alligator, you know?
Buttercup!
Yeah, and I'm like, I love
Buttercup.
This is the coolest book I've ever seen, you know? Like, I thought it was such a fun first issue, especially from Boom. Like anything that Boom puts out that is kind of young adult centric, focusing on, like, you know, teens coming up in the world, coming of age, I think they just nail every single thing. Avant-garde, Giant Days, you know, Backstagers, all these books that
heavy vinyl Hi-Fi Vinyl, Fight Club, whatever you want to call
Ronin Island, like all these books that they just have this great niche, and they really cultivate great stories in that genre. Even as those genres, like, go everywhere. Avant-garde is a basketball book. Fence is a fencing book. You know, heavy vinyl, like, what the hell? I don't even know what that was. That was crazy. Teen Dog, like, what? But, like, they know how to get to the core of that coming of age story, and I think BB Free is the beginning of another one of those really fantastic coming of age narratives. What do we all think around the table?
Raman, you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, okay, right off the bat, Buttercup. The best Gator Amigex and Hard Femme Swamp Protector.
Yes. I wrote the same note, yes.
Okay. And also, Sweet Ride. BB's dad, obviously evil. Anime would lead me to believe so based solely on his glasses. Though there is a possibility for redemption there based on the see-throughness of them in certain panels. So, you know, I'm holding out a little bit of hope that he's not like full through and through evil.
Just a jerk, maybe. Yeah.
Just a jerk, exactly. So, you know, fingers are crossed. But B Chula Radio, I love this. Pump up the volume, only adapted for 2019, and less cheese, broader appeal, and more potential for sci-fi twisty goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Art, amazing. Amazing. I loved this. This is exactly my wheelhouse. It's colorful, it's whimsical, it's beautiful, it's telling the story just as much as the words are. BB is gorgeous. She's so beautiful, she's so vibrant, she's just full of energy, and I just immediately want to be her friend. You know, like, I wish I had known her when I was 15. I think I'd have been a very different teenager, you know? It was a pleasure to read that book. Put a smile on my face. I loved
100% agree with both of you. That, first of all, the artwork is familiar, but it is bright and fresh and new at once. It's so many things thrown together. There's some Crowded, there's some Scott Pilgrim, there's anime, there's Erica Henderson. It's everything you could want this to be. When it needs to darken up a little bit, it manages to find a little corner where there's a shadow, but then you get those Beachula Radio moments with sunbeams and radio waves coming everywhere. Absolutely gorgeous. And I didn't know that he was that young, Joey. That's incredible.
Oh yeah,
first gig.
I don't know if it's like first gig. I think he might have done like some shorts with like maybe one of those developmental workshops, but like I was at the Boom panel and they were showing some pages from BB Free, and I had seen Royal on the LGBTQ panel the night before, and I was like, oh, this kid's back. I'm like, you know, it's cool to see him talk again. And the editor, whoever, you know, asked him, you know, he's like, how did you get this gig? And he was like, well, I was in my senior year at blah 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 school. Oh. and I was like, I'm sorry, what? And I went up and talked to him afterwards, and I was like, dude, like, you just graduated in May? And he's like, yeah, and now I'm doing BB Free. And I'm like, this, oh my, because they just showed like a couple of panels, and I was like, I am reading that book the second it drops. Mm-hmm. Because like he said, like, You want to be her friend. Like, the first page happens and she's like walking up with her headphones on, and I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. it's been a long time since I've like opened a book and like looked at art and thought to myself, like, this is cool. Like, this is something I've never necessarily seen before. And I think what really drew me is the color work, you know, like the kind of rounded, like, kind of that, it's something I have come to kind of expect from kind of a Boombox book, you know, but his colors are just so like ethereal, and like there's like this weird, like the blues are different. I don't know. And the last panel when things get energized, as it were.
Yeah.
And it's like, it literally felt like it was glowing in my hands. Yeah. And I was like, how, what? I loved it. And it was, and it's everything we love on the show, you know, this idea of inclusivity, this idea of kind of, you know, music, you know, we love music, and this idea of telling a good story, but doing so in a way that is representative and freeing and liberating. It just felt so, it felt so fresh. I it's been a long time since I've read a number one like this. I don't know if you can tell, but I really like it.
It is such a different sort of setting for a dystopian story. We've seen a lot of them over the years. This one has an air of, I've never been down this road before.
Mm.
Yes, there's been Mother Nature has struck back, and now it's the fractured states and the Florida islands and so on. And yeah, but adding these characters to this mix, and then it's the messages, as Gabby did so well with America, where it's these kids get to be free when they're 15, but they're still dads fighting against that, even if it's the prescribed thing to do, as in real life, parents do that too. And it's BB's quote, they want daughter robots to do everything they say and don't ask questions.
Yeah.
That is not BB free. That is not what's going to happen. So we get to that big zoop ending. I don't know where this one's going, but it was a lot of fun.
I think for me, one of the most refreshing things is to get, you know, from the kind of description, you have an ostensibly dystopian setting, but to get such a feeling of hope and positivity yes. from something that is dystopian, that is the refreshing part for me, because mm-hmm. you see, and I, yeah, like, don't get me wrong, please. I effing love sci-fi and fantasy. It is 90% of what I read and has been for, you know, 35 years. Mm-hmm. I am dating myself a little bit, but, you know, there we go. That is what I love. But it is hard to constantly take in so much negativity. And there is a lot of negativity in sci-fi and fantasy in terms of it is often a vehicle for social commentary.
Sure.
You know, and social commentary, as it should, is often a lens through which we can take a look at the things that are wrong with our society. And it gives us a little bit of a buffer between, you know, like the sci-fi and the fantasy aspect gives us a little bit of a buffer between ourselves and the reality of our situation. Right. And so we can critique it, but without directly critiquing it. So we can take a step back, which makes it a little bit easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a little easier to take. You know, it's a little less bleak than watching the news, which is a bit sad. But to get something that is set in a dystopian future, you know, something after Mother Nature has fought back and destroyed quite a bit, you know, and society looks very, very different, and yet we're still fighting some of the same battles. To have such a feeling of brightness and such a feeling of hope and such a feeling of there are still positive and good things to fight and live for, that has been missing for a long time in some of the fiction. Like, you know, that's why I had to stop reading and watching The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, no, I'm with you.
It's one of the things that's missing out of Game of Thrones. It's like some of the things, and I, like, again, I love some of that stuff. Like I watched Walking Dead. I read Walking Dead. I watched and read Game of Thrones, but I couldn't finish, you know, I couldn't get there because it got too depressing,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there wasn't that, like, okay, well, why, like, what's the impetus here? What's the reason, the motivation behind why we're still doing this?
Yeah.
If everything is horrible and everything is ruined forever, why are we still pushing forward?
And it can't just be to survive. Like, that's not right? enough, you know?
It's not. It's really not. You need to convince me. You need to talk to me about my motivations here, you know?
Yeah. And what's
good? You got to have a message. You got to throw it in there.
And with BB Free, like, that message is like, this is a 14-year-old girl about to become 15 who wants to be able to define who she is for herself, you know, and that's like, oh, she's come of age, girl. Like, that's what I like. This is the kind of story that I want. And another, to your point, Broman, like, a lot of dystopia. I read Undiscovered Country, number one, and it is a dystopian novel. Sorry, graphic comic. Sorry, and and explores, you know, a lot of these same ideas, but there's like a lot of these dystopian stories. Often, you mentioned Walking Dead as well. Descend into despair, violence often as well. Like an undiscovered country, a mutated bison eats a dude's leg. Like, that happens. And I'm like, in the book, I'm like, this is crazy. But BB Free is ostensibly set, like you said, in the same kind of future when nature has fallen apart and people are living in a very different kind of manner than we do now. And yet BB Free uses that setting to explore joy, freedom,
yeah.
finding joy and finding means to live a life that is free and worth living. And you just, you want to listen to her radio. I want it in my ears all the time.
Yeah. And it's not that there isn't value in exploring the despair. There absolutely is.
Yeah.
It's just, it gets a bit much when that's all we explore, because that doesn't reflect humanity. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, you know, there's a lot of good there. There's a lot of positivity. There has to be, otherwise there's no point, you know, but I think we need books like Be Free to pull us up and to remind us of what's good and what is worth fighting for and why we're excited to find ourselves and have these coming of age stories. And like, it's exciting to see that, you know, it's a really positive book.
Yeah. Now on Amen. The flip Thank side, now on the flip side, we got Fraction Elsa Chartier doing some hardcore crime drama over in November number one. Bob, did you want to lead us in a chat about that one?
Surely. It's a damp, dismal night, grim with unfulfilled promises. A woman sits by herself in a diner, working a crossword puzzle to the accompaniment of the rain beating down outside, alone with her thoughts. At least until a man grabs the seat across from her and makes an intriguing, if mysterious, offer. So begins November, Volume 1, The Girl on the Roof by Matt Fraction, Elsa Chartier, Matt Hollingsworth, and Kurt Ankeny. First in a series of three original graphic novels portraying, as per the back cover, the intersecting lives of three women in a dark criminal underground. As fire and violence tear through their city on a single day and night, they discover their lives are bound together by a mysterious man who seems to be the cause of it all. One night, one city, three women, November. This one had me at the first two pages, and with each turn, I was just drawn deeper into the complex intertwined narrative, interesting characters, twisty plot elements. Fraction Chartier teaming works beautifully. For me, I think both their styles, utilized in new yet noir classic kind of ways, I thought it a great beginning to a series that has the potential to be something very special indeed. Thoughts, anyone?
Robin?
Do you want me to go? Okay. So I loved the intro with the poem by Thomas Hood. He did not love November.
No, he did not.
But that was a beautiful mood setter, I thought. I'm guessing it should have warned me about the tone of the book. And yet, I'm not going to lie, this one started rough for me. The first section is quite bleak, and it doesn't get less so as the perspective shifts. And I didn't feel like initially that I had enough information from the first perspective to be comfortable moving on. Two things, though. I should have trusted Fraction. Number one. And number two, this book is not about making the audience comfortable. Before I was halfway through, I knew I would read this book again, just to pick up on any number of clues I missed the first time through. And before I was finished, I knew my initial impression that I didn't have enough info to connect with the story or the characters was flawed and premature. I need to know. So some of the specifics, though, for me. With the lettering, and I mentioned this earlier, so I'd like to get into it a little bit more. Full disclosure, my visual acuity sucks. So if the lettering isn't 100% clear, it can be a struggle for me to distinguish words sometimes. The scriptier the font is, it sometimes runs together, and if the smaller the letters are, it gets worse especially. I really liked that the lettering style changed with perspective a little bit. And it really did. It emphasized the mood differences and, you know, the internalized thoughts versus the external conversations. But I must admit, I struggled to read several sections of the book, and that impacted my impression at first. And the colors, for me, with this one, they were so great with the mood and the perspective shift indicator. And this, as an indicator, was easier on my eyes. The overall tones of this book are muted and a little bit washed out, but that's apropos of November and also of the story. And it does have a few bright points that are all the more evocative, like the red light and some of the other uses of red through the book. I won't get too far into that. all for being in more infrequent. It's definitely not my typical palette, but it really works for this book and this story. It's just perfect. In terms of art, again, it's not, I would not call this one typically my aesthetic, but I loved it. I loved the style by the end of the book. I put it down and I thought about it for a little bit and then I picked it back up and I started reading it again. Ooh. So it was funny. Like I got through the first perspective into the second kind of chapter, if you will. And all of a sudden I was like, nope, I see it now. Yep. Should have had trust. I knew he'd get me there. I knew he would. I knew, but I doubted and I shouldn't have.
There you go.
Yeah.
How about you, Joey?
No, totally. I agree with a lot of those sentiments there. I think, you know, I was reading the first section and I was like, what is this book about? I was like, okay, we got puzzles. We got this crazy, like you're going to read into a microphone and there's going to be a light. And I was like, I don't really know what's happening. And then it switched perspectives. And I was like, okay, so we're doing that. And then the second story went through and I was like, okay, I have a better grasp here. And then the third story happens and I'm like, okay, I'm starting to see some intersections. Okay, there's some crossover here as well. And then by the end of the book, I was like, I'm starting to get a sense of this world. I'm starting to get a sense of the rules of the world as well and the way that these texts are going to, sorry, these storylines are going to intersect. And this is a three, kind of like an oversized three-issue run. Is that kind of the...
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to see how the pieces end up fitting together and where we're going. It's this bizarre kind of like crime story, but there's something, there's just something off about it. And I'm really intrigued by it. I want to say this too. I have never seen Elsa Chartier's work look like this. And
yes,
I loved it. Like I opened and this, like Bronwyn, you were saying like, this isn't necessarily your palette. And I was like, this is mine. Like I just, this is, I love this kind of book. Like what this looked like. And again, I didn't really necessarily know what I was getting into in terms of the narrative, but I looked at the cover, I opened the first couple of pages and I was like, this is what I want. You know, and it's funny reading it from Fraction's written perspective because, you know, it reminded me a lot of what his work with Casanova used to look like too, with the Fabio Moon, Gabriel Ba stuff. And not that Elsa Chartier's work necessarily is as kind of hyper stylized as Moon and Ba's, but that kind of like those stark inky colors, the blues, mm-hmm. the reds, like. I love that. I love that so much. So that really carried me through this book as I was trying to just figure out what the hell was going on, you know, like, and yeah. I at the end of the day, I think I fall on that same side where it's like, I just find myself so intrigued by November that I want more of it, and I want the second issue, and I want the third issue to see how these pieces fit together. It reminded me a little bit of this book that, like, I don't think anybody else read because they only released two issues and they never ended up finishing it yet. But Anne Ocente and David Aja did this book Seed, last year.
Yes, the first issue was very interesting. Yeah,
and I was like, what the hell is happening? And it's that kind of same thing. It was like there was like four distinct narratives. And then, like, I read the second and third issue, and then there are two more that just have not been released. And it ends up being about, like, aliens and some shit. Ooh. Like, it's the craziest book ever. But that same thing where I was like, not that I think November is going to be about aliens, but I was like,
I don't know. I wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah.
there's something going on in this city that we don't know yet.
Like, there's something big. Something, like, it's like, it's not... Yeah, it's like the X-Files episodes, but it weren't not the X-Files episodes that were about aliens, but more the ones about like the government and like the corruption within blah blah blah.
Smoking
like,
man.
Yeah, and like that's and I was like, yeah, and there's like these weird flashback moments, and I'm like, it's crazy. I loved it. I'm really excited for the next two issues. It was to be honest, anytime Fraction releases anything, I'm always intrigued because, for better or worse, we don't necessarily get a lot from him these days. You know, he's got a lot going on, obviously. But I remember when, like, all we were reading were Fraction books. And now it's, like, once in a blue moon. And often those things are really interesting and different and engaging. And I kind of miss that voice. So having November was really cool. The real draw for me, though, was Elsa's work. It's on another level in a way that, like... And I was like, didn't Elsa do Wasp?
Yes.
And I was like...
And this thing is, it is so different
it's
than that.
So different.
So different.
So different.
Yeah. Now, it,
like,
is,
kudos
it is
to the colorist, too, though. Matt Hollingsworth, man.
Hollingsworth
is
one of the best.
It is so good. Like, that, yeah. It really sells the story for me in some ways. Like, just the way it's different from perspective to perspective, and those pops of color, they just, get right in you.
You were talking about Clay and Cowles before. Like, Matt Hollingsworth is one of the best colorists out there. Like, so, so good. Both Matts, Matt Hollingsworth and Matt Wilson. They're two of the best.
Yes.
And Jordy, we've hit all the highlights tonight.
Yeah,
like, it's true.
And you did mention the lettering problem. Kurt Onkany does an amazing job with that sort of twisty,
scratchy,
scripty lettering.
Yeah.
It's very attractive. I just really struggled to read it.
Yeah. I could see that. And there's something, like, particularly with these kind of noir bent books where they do that kind of, like, off kilter, scratchy lettering. And
yeah.
I'm just like, all right, we need to slow down with this, like, bold a little bit, like, but
yeah, there were actually words I could not distinguish. I still don't know what they say.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you right now, I don't even know what this book was about, so it doesn't matter.
Honestly, and, like, I'm waiting for it to go completely sideways. Like, I you know, we said, oh, it could be aliens. Like, aliens would be the least surprising thing for me, I think.
I don't know. I think we're going to stay grounded in the sense of not science fiction. Mm. But you can't tell. As you say, where something is off. We don't know exactly why these characters, they're not all good people, but we feel for them.
I kind of want to start a pool.
Yeah, a Deadpool.
A Deadpool, as it were.
Here's the thing. Elsa's art brings you into these people where you want to yell at them through the page.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do that. No.
Don't pick up the gun.
The gun in the puddle.
Don't pick up the gun.
Oh, my God. I feel so seen right now. Were you listening to me read this book?
It's a thing. And there's no way to really describe it. It is film noir. It is a piecemeal story that we're getting little bits of that will come together. Is it Sin City without the misogyny? Yeah.
Oh, ideally. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So that's all good.
That is a remarkable description, Bob.
Oh, thank you.
Should have led with that.
Yeah, right?
We're going to close with it. Okay.
Any other thoughts on either of our open discussion books?
Everyone should buy them both.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they're kind of alpha and omega in terms of how different they are.
There you go.
Yeah. But incredibly diverse and incredibly dynamic in so many different ways.
And both are very much worth the read.
Yeah. So just to recap what we talked about for open discussion, we did BB Free number 1 from Gabby Rivera and Roald Dunlap. And we also did November from November number 1 from Matt Fraction and Elsa Chartier, Matt Hollingsworth, and the letterer again.
Oh, I just put the book down. It is Kurt Onkany.
Okay, yeah. I just couldn't say it, so I didn't want to butcher it. I had to pull a Steve tonight. We also talked about House of X, Powers of X, Die Number 1, Batman Number 82, Undiscovered Country Number 1, Bolivar Eats New York, X-Force Number 1, New X-Men Number 1, Marvel Action Captain Marvel Number 3, Lois Lane Number 5, and Pretty Deadly the Rat Number 3. About halfway through with that one, so get on it. I'll be catching up 100%.
Ooh, ditto.
Yeah. did anybody have any other news or things they'd like to share?
Yes, actually, for those who get the New York Times, this Sunday, there was a lovely little surprise. Friend of the pod, Kristen Godsnack's Making Friends 2 was reviewed in the prestigious New York Times book review section this weekend.
Ooh.
Yeah, nice. She had a whole page in the children's book section. We're getting near the holidays, and it's a good book. You should get one. I have a pile of them over here that are going out for Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
I have a copy with a lovely self-portrait in it from Kristen that I picked up at the con as well. She's so cool, and I'm just so happy for her.
Yeah.
She was amazing to have on our show. We enjoyed that episode so much.
Before we get into the goodbyes and everything, we just wanted to run by and see what everybody was excited to be picking up this week at the shop. I'll go first. Some really cool number ones this week that I'll definitely be checking out. The first volume of La Voz de Mayo from Hank Baraja is coming out from Image. Hank moderated the Si Se Puede panel that I attended that I really loved, and he was talking up his book a lot, and I'm looking forward to picking this one. It's a kind of a retelling of his grandfather's time serving in the military and kind of growing up in America too. So really interesting book there. DC Superhero Girls, Giant Edition here, number one. I'll definitely be picking that one up. A comic book version of the Big Hero 6 cartoon series from IDW. I'll be checking that out. Hell yes, I'll be checking that out. I love Big Hero 6, and I wish there was more of that.
That's awesome.
Morbius, number one, from Vita Ayala. Folklords number one from Boom Studios. Ooh. By Matt Kent. I'll be checking that one up as well. A couple of and Fallen Angels, another Dawn of X book here. This one apparently is about the X-Men that don't necessarily feel at home on Krakoa and are feeling a little out of sorts there. I think X-23 is one of the characters, so I'll definitely be checking that one out as well. In terms of other books that I'm reading and following up on, Invaders, obviously, this week as well, Ghosted in L.A., Agents of Atlas, and X-Men number two comes out too. Event Leviathan number six, the final issue of that DC event. I'll be reading that one too, hopefully talking about it on the show next week. And last but not least, a new original graphic novel from Cecil Castellucci. It's not really a graphic novel, and I hate using that term for books that aren't necessary. This is more of a graphic memoir of sorts, and it's called Girl on Film from Boom. It's Cecil Castellucci's kind of autobiography of growing up, so it's a graphic memoir rather. Ooh. So yeah, really cool week for me here, and I don't usually have that many books, but I'll try and read as many of them too. Bob, what are you getting next week?
Well, I would just want to throw in, speaking of graphic memoirs, that's a new, we got to use that one.
Mm-hmm.
I did finish They Called Us Enemy, and that'll break your heart and uplift your spirit at the same time. What an amazing work by George Takei and his collaborators.
Oh.
You'll be hearing about that one come the end of the year, I'm thinking. I'm just saying. As to what's new on the shelf, Catalyst Prime 7 Days number two, Gail Simone and her crew. Mm-hmm. The Invaders, as you say. We have Deadpool number one by Kelly Thompson. Yes, indeed. Future Foundation number four, the next to last issue. Metal Men number two. And something that's going to be hard for me to talk about, the final issue of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Oh, no.
Yep. Going to be a tough week.
That's heartbreaking.
Yes. There are 58 great issues, an original graphic novel, and two young adult prose novels.
Yeah.
Nice run that can be reread over and over and over again.
And will.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember how long it took to read Squirrel Girl Beats Up the Marvel Universe? It took like 7 hours to read those 80 pages or whatever. There's so much text. I adored that book.
Seriously. We read that for our show too. I mean, it was amazing. Amazing. But oh my God. Yeah, that one, that's dense. It's so good.
Have anyone checked out the official Twitter of the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl?
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Good stuff going on there. And Tippi has her own Twitter. It doesn't get updated as much.
Well, I mean, like, it takes a long time for Tippi to type, you know, like.
Yes. And yeah. she types in girl language, so you have to be careful.
Brahman, are you picking anything up this week?
Well, okay, so yes. Steve yes. curates our actual pull list, physical and our electronic pull list. So mm-hmm. he already has that in the bag, even though he is out of town mysteriously. I, however, am chaotic good. I go and I visit our LCS and I pick up whatever floats my boat. But I do tend to read in long form as much as I can. So I hit the graphic novels and the bound books and the hardbacks and add to our collection that way. So I haven't decided what I'm going to pick up yet because I haven't gone in.
So I like that approach.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to surprise myself.
Yeah, I'm also chaotic good. I don't know if you got that sense. Yeah, Bob, what's your alignment? Do you know offhand?
I don't even know what you're talking about. So clue me in.
Yeah, it's like you know, are you like lawful neutral? Are you lawful good? Are you like what's the top one? Like,
so your choices are lawful or chaotic, and then, you know, good, neutral, and evil.
I think I drift toward lawful good.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
Nerd! I'm just kidding.
No question. I own that.
Yeah. Or sometimes I'm just chaotic neutral. Like, sometimes I just, like I just, I'm totally...
I could see that.
Anything goes.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, I'm chaotic good.
Throw the pieces up in the air and just see where they land for the fun of it.
It's funny because I'm teaching Othello right now, and like that's also Ooh. How I think about like Iago as a character. I mean, we're not going to do deep dive Shakespeare right now, but like that, like
oh
I
my
use
God,
those
I'm ready
terms.
For it though, Joey. When you want to, I'm there.
And it's funny because like I'll like use that language in class. I'll be like, you know, like he's like total like chaotic neutral, chaotic evil, and like I always know who the nerds are in class. Because they're like, ha, 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 Dungeons and Dragons, you know, like, and then I'll use other references. I'll be like, you know, like sometimes he just wants to see the world burn, and then I'll be like, oh, Batman, you know, like, so it's fun kind of seeing where the nerddoms in the classroom are.
Yeah, the big Venn diagram of all the people with all their language.
Yeah. And memes, that's the new thing for any aspiring teachers out there. You got to get on the memes. You got to know what the memes are. But yeah, okay. So good week. Good week for books. Good week this past week. It's been really, really fun. Did anybody else have anything they'd like to share? Last final thoughts here.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind just throwing it out there that the Ladies of Valhalla now have our own website.
Yeah.
So if you want to check us out or see our sister podcast, which obviously you can find on the Total Talking Comics website as well, we do have our own website, which is ladiesofvalhalla.com. So Sarah blogs there regularly, and she's always updating our pull list, and it's very exciting stuff.
Cool. And as you said at the top of the show, next episode is Giant Days.
It is, and I'm very excited about it.
Mid-December, so keep an eye out for that, too.
I'll have to get my tissues ready for that one.
Oh, I imagine so.
Yeah, that one hit us hard. Otherwise, we have reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We love getting them, so keep sending them, particularly in terms of questions, reflections on the show. Adam, we'll get to yours next week, I promise. We are also on Twitter, @TalkingComics. Don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for reviews from our contributors. Don't forget to check out Talking Valiant, TNT Adventure, The Ladies of Valhalla. Also, you know, if you get our show on Spotify or if on iTunes or wherever, please rate and review the show. You know, just give us that 5 stars. That's all we're asking for.
Not much.
5 stars.
So easy.
Come on.
Click
you know,
it.
You give your Lyft driver that for just not talking to you. So we start the other time. It really helps us and keeps our show up towards the top. So definitely do that if you do listen to us. Otherwise, Bronwyn, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show this week.
Thank you. Yes. It has been my pleasure of mine.
Yeah. So much more fun than Steve. No, I'm just kidding. Steve, we miss you. And Sarah, we miss you. And we'll be happy to get everybody back together in the next couple of weeks. Bob, where can our listeners find you?
Old-fashioned email. BobBreyer@talkingcomicbooks.com.
Nice. And Bronwyn?
You can find me on all the things at ShinyBabyB.
And I am at Jerry Bercino on Twitter. Steve is at @dead_anchoress. Sarah is at Geek Country Lady,
yes.
Okay, and Jess is at Jarsica. I've never had to do this part, so I always don't remember. But anyway, so that'll do it this week. So for Bob.
Sarah, very happy you didn't get murdered over the weekend.
Oh,
so happy.
God. Yes. Bronwyn?
Lightning round.
Nice. I have been Joey Bercino. Steve and Sarah will be back in the coming weeks. So thank you so much for listening. Be excellent to each other. And until the next time on the Talking Comics podcast, to be continued. Maybe I'll watch the first episode of Mandalorian.
Ooh.
If I can get Disney Plus to work.
How many hundreds of millions of people do you figure jumped on board this thing?
Oh, I mean, the internet is dumb. It is a dumb thing. Like these launches, it was like, all right, at 11 a.m., everyone can access Disney Plus because
and they all did.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's how the internet works. No.
Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, did you build a giant server farm for that? Because I don't think you did.
Yeah. Just because you're Disney doesn't mean you literally own an infinite bandwidth.
Right? Like, somebody didn't think that through.
Hey, as opposed to all those Marvel announcements that Brie Vort was saying, we're going to break the internet. This actually broke the internet.
Exactly. That's a pun. We should have saved that. Damn it, Bob.
Sorry. I'll say it again later.
Yeah, but it's not going to be as good for me.
You're an actor.
okay, so we all good otherwise?